Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And do I sound a lot better? I feel like I sound a lot better. I can breathe. I don't feel like the atmosphere is trying to kill me anymore. I don't feel like I'm choking to death on everything. But in my annoyance with the outside world, I decided to stop shaving, maybe out of protest. I have no idea, but it is really itchy. How do people have beards? I cannot stand having this stuff on my face. I'm going to go shave, as a matter of fact, right after I get done with this intro. So, you know, this is the last one you're going to hear with the beard. Is it making my voice different? Do I sound like a lumberjack? Am I gruff enough for you, partner? Today on the show, we have got a conversation that was a little awkward, to be honest with you. It was awkward on my end, not because the guest was doing anything wrong, but because I had come to a realization while we were talking that this guy seemed to be incredibly enlightened. And I don't know why that threw me off, but man, I found that unsettling. And, you know, it was challenging a lot of perceptions, and it was really strange to see a being sitting across from you and be so at ease, so comfortable, so willing to accept whatever the wind blows in their direction. It was really difficult for me to handle that. And that says a lot about me. I'm what you might call, let's say, hopefully defensive. And what I mean by that is I'm kind of always aware that there's awful things in the world and that maybe in general people can't be trusted to do the right thing or to be kind. But to be prepared for that and not let it hinder me from going about my day and hoping that I'm wrong. And maybe that's a flavor of cynicism. I don't know. What I do know is that the guy that was sitting across from me having this conversation was having none of that. Just completely, completely still and comfortable and ready to handle anything in the world because there's always something to be grateful for from any outcome. And that blew my mind. To see it kind of put into practice in a regular kind of dude. He's a bass player in a rock and roll band, and we get into that. In fact, I kind of had a hard time getting to all the kinds of things I wanted to know about. We didn't even get into some of the things that I wanted to talk about because I was so fascinated by everything that was already happening. We didn't get to a lot of the opinions on depression and his personal experiences with depression and loss of loved ones and things like that. And those things are there and they shape this man. And we didn't get into it because here I was just dumbstruck by the complete and utter serenity that this dude has found. Maybe it comes from the way he was raised. Maybe it comes from being a new father. I think there's some clues in this conversation, and they probably just went right over my head. But he's not a yogi. He's not, you know, some kind of Zen Buddhist master. I mean, it was basically like sitting in a room with Keanu Reeves for an hour. What is going on there? I think that you're going to really hear the tension, at least in me, at the beginning. But it's not a bad tension. It was an excited tension. It was trying to understand. It was like discovering somebody can phase through walls and then going, how did you do that? Explain this to me. I want to know everything about this. And so this is my conversation with Abraham Willock. You know, I can't think of many things more rewarding than just sitting down and talking to people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how are you? What's been going on with you?
I got a baby kind of the new thing.
That is pretty new. How long ago was the baby?
He came about 14 months ago.
Wow, that's so crazy. It's nuts how time flies with kids.
It was having this, I don't know, something in my arms that was like apparently a tiny human.
Yeah.
You know, that you don't really believe is real.
Yeah.
You know, up until the point it's actually in your arms. It's just like, it's just this bulge in your, you know, partner's belly. And,
yeah.
And they know that something's going on. You just see like a, you know, a bulge developing in your stomach.
It's an idea. It's a concept.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he's, you know, there's a vaginal explosion and there's a creature that needs a constant attention for, you know, 24 hours a day, every couple hours. And
absolutely.
And then it's basically, submitting to the fact that my life is a life of service from now on.
Yeah. You know, most people don't put it that way. I find that's probably the most accurate description I can think of. I mean, from my own perspective, that was precise. I mean, that was absolutely the case. The moment my son was born, my first son, it was just like, I honestly didn't even know if I wanted to be a father. I mean, I was terrified of the whole thing. I didn't know if I wanted to do it. I didn't know if I could do it. And then the moment the kid showed up, I was like, oh, I'm just, that person's destroyed. And now I got to figure out who this new person is. But this new person wants to be of service to this new person.
Absolutely. It's like your life is not, it's not your life anymore. It's everything going towards this other person, but it's a point of surrender. And basically if you have to surrender and there's no... Well, there is an option to not surrender, but that, I think, is what creates bad situations.
Yeah.
Where people want to, they want to cling to their old way of life, and they cling to their old thing, and they objectify their child.
Yeah.
You know, and basically do whatever they can and not spend time with them or not connect and kind of like, you know, keep their own thing going as their main focus.
Sure.
You know, how do I keep this kid away from me so that I can keep doing what I've been doing.
Yeah. And honestly, when you have that moment of recognition of getting it, when you're like, I have to surrender to this. Mm-hmm. I have to give in to this. I'm in service of something greater than myself.
Mm-hmm.
You start to find that the balance between your wants and needs and the wants and needs of the unit that you've signed up to be a part of are not that hard to balance.
No.
Because you just kind of know where everything takes precedence. Mm-hmm. And when it's going to be okay to take some time for you to go do this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never really you anymore. It's mm-hmm. always what we're doing right now is allowing me to go play in a band.
Right.
For a few hours on this day or to go do a rehearsal. We are allowing that. It's a we.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to come back. And then I'm going to go to work. And then I'm going to come back. And then, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's no longer just your own decisions. And I think that terrifies people who can't see what it is to give yourself over to something incredibly important, profound, and beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an honor to be a part of something like that.
Absolutely.
And I'm a divorced dad. So, like, me and my first wife, we didn't work out. And so, you know, it kind of, in a way, strengthened my resolve with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can't bail on the whole unit.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
You have to sort of step back and recognize, if we can't make this part of it work, what can we make work? And that's heavy. But it never leaves you that sense of obligation that you have, that you're so happy to have, you're so grateful to have.
Well, there's an understanding of how we're able to survive as a species when it's very primordial, like that love. I don't know, that might not even be the right word for it, that you experience with your child and that sense of responsibility of, like, I need to be calm is like the first thing.
Yeah.
And I need to be available.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't have a choice. I've been chosen to do this.
Yeah. Whether you're ready or not, you're the guy.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. I mean, but you weren't always the guy. I mean, what kind of guy were you, like, you know, 20 years ago? What kind of kid were you?
Kind of kid?
Yeah.
I just wanted to experience everything. I started going to New York City when I was about 15 years old, and taking acting classes when I was about 14. And that was a complete transformation for me.
And were you from New York State?
I'm from New York State, yeah, originally.
Nice.
So I studied with this teacher. Her name was Jolene Adams. She's still out there doing her thing, and she's just amazing. And she gave me myself, literally, where she, this is actually something I'm interested in doing sometime soon. I've been talking about it for a while, but I need to put it into motion of starting an acting class.
Yeah.
Of, like, basically just putting people up in front of other people and saying, how do you feel? And, like, getting people to actually connect with themselves and be comfortable in front of other people and be, it's a true connection.
Yeah.
I mean, because the way it gave me myself is that it helped me see that my circumstances and anything that I could say that could identify me or I am,
yeah,
were just circumstances, but they weren't the actual who I am.
Sure. Were you having some trouble at that time?
I grew up in a bad or good, whatever you want to call it. But my dad was an abusive alcoholic when I was a really young kid. So I don't even think he was aware of what took place during that time that I was growing up.
Like, he was there, but he was not present.
He was working all the time, and then when he was around, it was just terrifying. He was explosive. He was physically, emotionally, and, you know, verbally abusive to my mom, you know.
Yeah.
I don't even, you know, to the point where it was like, you know, broken bones and that kind of thing, but that I don't even think he was aware of. But he's like in the 30 years since then come full circle, where he's been sober for 30 years and he's actually helping people. And it was just, I don't know, seeing this from my parents has showed me that anything is possible in our lives, that we can go anywhere in our lives.
Yeah.
With, like, you can go from any, wherever you are right now, just like you can go anywhere.
Yeah.
It can go 180 degrees. Just stay here.
Yeah.
You know, just don't give up on everything.
I mean, yeah. I have a kinship with you in that, mm-hmm. because my dad was an alcoholic. He wasn't super abusive, but I mean, I was little, so it's kind of tough for me to. I remember a couple of things,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I remember getting tossed around and getting hurt a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He cleaned up when I was around five, and mm-hmm. he's been sober since.
Mm-hmm.
So like, and he became a substance abuse counselor.
Mm-hmm.
So like that, he really had a journey.
Oh, wow. Well, it's we're almost in the same kind of thing where it's like that transformation. It developed a huge sense of compassion.
Yeah.
You know, for me, but also a lot of anger that I didn't know how to deal with, you know, for a long time. And it took, you know, a lot of years of therapy for me to just like be like, it's my fault.
Yeah.
You know, and it's my thing and it's mine to deal with. Whether I like it or not, nobody at this point in my life, I have a really genuine understanding that nobody can make me mad.
Right. Yes, exactly.
It's actually impossible that basically they're giving me an incredible gift by helping me look at something that has been with me that I've been carrying around forever that I don't need to carry around anymore.
Yeah.
That I can just leave behind anytime that I want to, and I can look at it and I can grieve it and I can let it go and I can put it behind me.
Yeah. And the beginning of this was acting.
This is acting.
Yeah. I think that I found something in acting as well. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a lot of parallel tracks going on here. But the thing that I found in acting, because a lot of people would look at it as, how can you get to know yourself by pretending to be a different person? And it's actually pretty profound because mm-hmm. you learn to empathize with people other than yourself by trying to see yourself as them.
Mm-hmm.
And you also come at it from a completely different point of view. And, you know, to use the word of the day, if you surrender to the process and you allow yourself to be as open and as honest as you can with the information that you have, there's a level of vulnerability and honesty that you have to be comfortable with in order to be really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there are certain actors that you can watch them sit in a chair and it blows your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just something about being that willing to be that still and that present.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to explain.
It is hard to explain because it's like even some of my, you know, best performance experiences, you know, on stage was I could literally like meditate and like watch myself go through it.
Yeah.
And like even while you're going through it, you can even like see what your body is doing and you can almost like fine tune how you're using your voice, how you're sitting, where your tension is in your body to be able to like make people feel how you want them to feel.
Yeah. There's a trick to it. There's a real trick to it.
But it's being genuine at the same time where you're actually surrendering to the situation, but you can't go over the top and you can't lose yourself.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just become a crazy person.
Right.
Yeah. You're just
you still got to be you.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, that's what can be tough
mm-hmm.
when you're younger and you're still figuring yourself out and you're still going through all that shit. The So, you know, as you're going through these acting classes and you're learning to step outside of yourself and you're getting a place to put these things, you're giving a voice to these things that you're not quite sure how to articulate in mm-hmm. your everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
At what point did you first discover that you were able to really get something back from that?
I think it was pretty much immediately, or just once I really...
Did you do plays?
Yeah, I did a bunch of plays.
Nice.
And kind of scene study workshops that we'd end up producing these kind of like showcases, I guess we'd call them, where it's multiple scenes, you know, from multiple plays, you know, where that would be about 5 to 10 minutes a piece.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty much immediately that it was safe. It was some place where I could really like explore my emotional life.
And it's encouraged.
Yeah. And then just traveling into New York City on my own, which is like, oh yeah, I'm going to an acting class, and I just like take off and just wander around the city for hours and hours.
Any so, excuse.
Yeah. And just, you know, go to museums and just do whatever I want in New York City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when did you first decide that you were going to get out of New York? Where did you go from there?
Well, I was living at my parents. It was outside of the city. And then I moved into the city and then ended up moving to Los Angeles for a short time. It was supposed to be like a 3-month move, and I subletted my apartment in New York, and I had a rent controlled apartment that was $750 at 49th and 9th. And then I subletted it for 3 months, and the person I subletted it to didn't pay my rent for 3 months, and I got kicked out of my apartment. So I ended up moving to going back to Los Angeles, and a woman that I was dating from a restaurant that I was working at in New York. Her mom was a writer, and we ended up moving out to Studio City.
Yeah.
And, so, and I mean, living at her parents' house. Thing. And living like, at her
let's
parents'
take
house.
This to the next level.
Yeah. So I was living at her, place, and then I was taking care of her, like 95-year-old grandmother, and then her like 60-something-year-old uncle who had polio. And that was like my job. And then next thing you know, she's like telling me that I'm not spending enough time with them because I'm starting to get involved in, you know, theater projects and stuff like that. And
yeah.
Then it was this really weird situation where she was my boss. And and the next thing I know, I'm like in a studio apartment in Reseda, you know, after spending a couple of nights sleeping in my car up in the Hollywood Hills, like just finding a place on the side of the road to park and sleep at night until I could find a place to live.
Yeah.
You know, because it was just like, this is not going to work.
So how do you keep yourself together in moments like that? Were you experiencing any moments of hopelessness, or, you know, this is it, like this isn't gonna work out, or what did you do? What were you feeling at that time? Because that's pretty intense.
I was just feeling like I'm gonna make it. I'm gonna, you know, I'll survive. You know, I'll get through today, and
just incredible focus.
Yeah, just try and, you know, go to work, make a little bit of money, save up some money, and I don't know.
Where did that come from?
Well, I was still in classes in Los Angeles, and, you know, I still had that core of, like, you know, still, you know, practicing.
So you had people that were, like, really there. In your corner believing in you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's – but to be able to still have that – still have that focus in those moments alone, sleeping in a car on the side of the road,
mm-hmm.
that speaks volumes about the value of those people and, you know, how good they were at making you feel heard.
Yeah, it was, that was about all I had at the moment.
Yeah.
At that time. It was just those, you know, a couple of people that were in my corner.
Well, and you actually did a couple of things, right? I mean,
you
got yourself out there.
Yeah, actually, in relation to depression and suicide, I did a Wyoming suicide prevention commercial.
And I saw that commercial, and it's amazing.
Yeah, and that was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done as an actor, even though it was only an 8-hour shoot or a 10-hour shoot, but it was still the Wyoming head of Wyoming Department of Health came up to me and says, "I don't know how many lives you'll save, but I know you'll save at least one." He's like, "Thank you so much for being here."
And that's heavy. I mean, that's a responsibility.
I just went there. I just was like, you know, he said that to me and I was sitting in a makeup chair and they're setting up the next shot. And then, you know, then I'm just like doing whatever I got to do to be in that, like, cause the spot was basically where you're at, where that moment is happening.
Yeah.
You know, and that's basically what the spot was, is like that moment of like, I give up.
Yeah.
And like what I had to do to myself to get there, I couldn't have done it without the training we were talking about earlier, where you're able to actually observe yourself.
Yeah.
And go through that experience and observe yourself going through that experience.
Because you've got to be able to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to be able to come back okay.
Yeah.
So in thinking about it, though, I mean, that has to be such a, you know, two sides of the same coin kind of situation. I mean, you know, you think about everything that led to you getting up to that point and how often you didn't give up, how mm-hmm. often you, in spite of the incredible odds or the adversity you were facing or,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever was happening at that given time, here you are.
Mm-hmm.
And you're playing someone who's hitting that moment. Like you haven't hit that moment yet. I feel like everybody's got it in them, whether it's something very extreme on the far end of the spectrum. Like it would take a lot to get me there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other people who are, you know, it really wouldn't take that much to get me there, you know?
Yeah.
Just depending on how you're wired, how you're raised, socioeconomic factors, sociological factors, I mean, everything. There's so much that goes into building a human being and figuring out how strong they're going to be at the end of the day. But when you go through everything that you've gone through and you come out the other side of it, to then be playing a character who has hit that space. I imagine you could probably sympathize with that to a degree. Like, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. That, you know, that sure. kind of thing. Like what would I do if I had hit rock bottom? Where mm-hmm. would I be? I mean, that's got to affect you somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just this particular situation, it was like that. I just had nobody. That was really the feeling of nothing, you know, that I don't have any, you know, anybody who cares.
Yeah.
You know, and like, but really that doesn't exist because there's always someone.
Yeah.
Even if it's a stranger, there's another human being who's there.
Yeah.
You know, just because they're a human being.
Yeah.
And,
but see, that's incredibly insightful. That's almost like you know, and knowing your place in the universe,
mm-hmm.
like almost with a, you know, a Zen-like certainty. Did you grow up with any religion?
I grew up with kind of Catholic. My dad's family was Catholic and, mm-hmm. You know, we did go to church when I was younger and it's not something that I really ever connected with. And then my mom got into Hinduism and started kind of really following that path when I was about right after my parents divorced.
Yeah.
And then, when I was in my early 20s, my mom had started kind of a center in upstate New York, and she had a guru from India had come there, and he was teaching, and then I would go to meditation classes with him, that I just thought that I was closing my eyes and going to meditation, and you know, yeah. Then we'd hang out in the room and meditate all day, and then we'd open our eyes and we go to dinner or whatever. And then I realized in my 30s that we were actually walking everywhere and that yeah. I was in this like otherworldly state. And then, I don't know, I've had a really interesting kind of, I've been very blessed with certain gifts as far as like spiritual teachers and
yeah.
that sort of thing.
Because I mean, everything I'm hearing from you, the thing that surprises me so much is that, you know, it's a thing that most people do come to later in life. You know, mm-hmm. the Eastern religions are, or you know, let's. I even hesitate to use religion as the word, but you mm-hmm. know what I mean. But like the Eastern philosophy, if you will, is a lot more rooted in throwing away your fear
mm-hmm.
and listening to you speak about everything. That's the thing that I'm hearing is there's no fear. Mm-hmm. There's no fear in anything that you're saying. And it seems like you've had that for a long, long time because it's, it just astounds me. You know, that's one place where we're different because I definitely had a lot of fear.
Well, I mean, Joseph Campbell, when I first started watching like the Power of Myth videos and stuff yeah. like that was a huge influence on me. And one statement that he made that religion is actually, it comes from the word religio, which means relinking to yourself, to your true nature. It's the relinking is the practice of that. And I mean, there's basically two things that have gotten me through the hardest times. And one is, a mantra or whatever you want to call it, that all things are as they should be at all times. And the other is there's always something to be grateful for.
Yeah.
And those are like at my darkest times, those are what I've focused on. And that's what's carried me through and gotten me to the other side or at least gotten me to fall asleep.
Right. Yeah. Because you can deal with it tomorrow.
Right. And that we get back to the surrender. That's like where the surrender was for me. It's like, you know, at the darkest of times, it's like, okay, everything's as it should be. It's the universe is perfect.
Yeah.
And I mean, and more in the last like 5 or 6 years, I've been able to participate in some Native American ceremonies, and I've been able to Sundance and Ten Fire, some Lakota Sundances, and I go to sweat lodges regularly. And what that has given to me is that we're perfect right now.
Yeah.
Everyone is exactly the perfect manifestation of the divine at this very moment. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to earn anything. You don't have to prove anything. You are already that perfect instrument of divinity.
Yeah.
As you and through you. I mean, it's like, and denying that is like saying, is like looking at a tree and saying that leaf is wrong.
That's incredible. So how does this personality come into play, being the bass player in a rock band?
Music is another level of, energy in motion is, one of the definitions for emotion, and it's basically the same thing as sound.
Yeah.
So it's more direct to the heart way of, you know, getting to people, you know, and trying to just bring a little bit more joy into the world, you know, like,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's all processing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all figuring out, you know, what kind of energy it is you want to put forward.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's fun about rock and roll too, is that It's a release.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place to put intellectual puzzles and frustrations and the blues, mm-hmm. and all of these things, and give them a voice and make something wonderful out of it. And all you're doing is moving the air.
Yeah.
It's all just moving the air.
Yeah.
And you're giving these thoughts and these feelings to the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And that wind is then slamming into people.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. What could be better than that?
Absolutely.
But how, I'm so endlessly fascinated about all of this, because I see a lot of parallels between you and I. But I also do see now, in my own hindsight, I'm able to see the ways in which I had mistaken my fear for a defense mechanism against danger. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I had created my own obstacles to keep myself safe from what I assumed was danger, but in fact was just a new experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so now in this state that I'm in now, I recognize that I had to go through the things that I did to become this. And this is the version of me that I'm happiest with, mm-hmm. out of all the ones that I've been before. How many versions of you have there been?
I lost track a while ago. I don't know.
Do you really, you know, shed the skin and just walk away? Or I mean, because you seem like you've got, how much of this incredible focus is long lasting, and how much is bits and pieces achieved over time?
I think it's a combination of both. And if you want to really bring it down to, something practical, it's a choice of gratitude, and that,
but that's not an easy choice.
It is. And it's not, it is. And it's not, but it's something that we have every day.
Yeah.
And that's really, when you get down to it, that's really the only thing that we actually have control over in this world is that choice. Is like, we can choose resentment or we can choose gratitude at every single second of our lives, and whatever we're carrying around, we can decide to drop it or we can keep carrying it. And that's real.
Yeah, it absolutely is. But it takes a level of awareness with yourself that a lot of people are just not comfortable with.
Or just getting beaten down to a point where you're like, I give up. I'm just going to be grateful for what I have.
I don't know if that's the choice most people would have after the world just, you know, chews them to pieces.
Right.
That, you know, I guess I'll just be grateful for it.
Yeah. I mean, because that's, you know, that's what I've, you know, what I've been through as far as, you know, my parents and everything else, that's like, I can continue to resent them, and I could be angry, and I could, what am I creating now?
Yeah.
What am I actually like bringing into the world? I can be an angry, resentful person, and that's what my son will be. Or I can be a calm, peaceful person and show him how to be calm and know that he's just fine just the way he is, and he doesn't have to do anything, doesn't have to prove anything to anyone. He's just, and if he speaks his mind and says what he needs, he's going to be heard.
Yeah.
That's all I got. That's really all I got right now.
Well, yeah, because I mean, anger and resentment and fear and jealousy and things like that, all of those things are things that are going to hit you at some point. The difference is how you are taught to manage those things when they come on, because they're human emotions, and mm-hmm. you're going to get them all. You're going to get the whole box of crayons, whether you want to paint with them all or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to recognize the fear and the anger and the resentment, anger especially, because anger is a tough one,
mm-hmm.
To be able to recognize that, in the moment it's happening and redirect it to somewhere else or diffuse it. I mean,
just watch it.
Yeah. I mean, what do you do with anger? I mean, where do you put it when you have it?
At this point, try not to do harm is the first thing. Depending on how strong it is or whatever is going on is, you know, try not to pass it on because it's mine.
Yeah.
It's own it. Say it's mine. Nobody can ever make you angry.
Yeah.
You know, don't like whoever triggered it, that person you should thank them.
Yeah.
And say, thank you for showing me that and helping me grow. You know, that's the high end of the spectrum. And
yeah.
Then the low end of the spectrum is we've seen it in multiple ways. It can either be expressed outward or can it be expressed inward.
Say goodbye to your teeth.
Yeah, or to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it can be, if you have nobody around to direct it at, then it turns inward.
Yeah. You start smashing walls or drinking too much
or whatever it is, or you know, ultimately, you know, doing something that hurts yourself.
Yeah.
Just because it's energy in motion. Emotion is like one of the second definitions for it is energy in motion. And if you can just ride it,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And observe it and like, don't self-identify. That's the other thing. It's like, it's
but
not
riding
you.
It is not the same thing as giving into it.
I don't know.
It's,
yeah.
It's because riding it is almost more like, allowing it to pass through you
sure.
naturally, but you've got the reins.
Mm-hmm. Or do you? Yeah, that's the hard part. You know, it's like, you know.
Well, maybe you do. Maybe you don't. I mean, anger's a tough one. I mean, anger is one that I didn't know that I had anger issues until I was probably 30 years old. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. I never saw anger. But that's because everything I ever did was couched in some form of avoidance of pain or fear, or you know, I was very careful to keep everything at arm's length, and then I started to open up to the world, and it was just chaos. Like I was not prepared for that, and then I discovered anger, and because I had never learned how to express anger, because I think I didn't feel like I had a right to my anger.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, so for me, I didn't know what to do with it when I finally recognized that I had it and I didn't know where to put it because I couldn't hide it in sadness anymore. I couldn't hide it in petty resentments toward other people anymore. I couldn't hide it in jealousy. I was starting to strip away all of these things and coming out the other side, but it was such a painful process to rip these pieces of myself away and discover I have no idea what's underneath this because I haven't been cultivating these good things. I've been cultivating these bad things. And now it's time to start making a decent human being out of what I have here. And I felt like I was too late at the outset. But that was just, again, fear.
Well, there's the thing, you're already perfect just as you are.
And you're never done.
Right now, you're perfect. Just exactly as you are.
Yeah.
And can you give that to yourself? Can you accept that you are just like a leaf on a tree, that you're exactly right now? You don't have to do anything. You don't have to earn anything. There's nothing wrong with you.
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. That's a hard one. It's, you know, I've done years and years of, self-development and, therapy and, you know, just trying to make sense out of connecting with everything around me rather than protecting myself. from everything around me. Mm-hmm. And it's made for a much more rich life experience, being more open to looking at things as they are and being less critical of them and more curious about them. There are days when it's tough. You know, I still got some hardwired stuff in me. You know, when I see injustice and,
sure,
you know, racism and stuff like that, it still sticks at me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it still raises the hairs on the back of my neck. And, you know, the anger comes out. And then the thing that I find now is that I can recognize whether or not the anger is going to serve me in any way, and whether or not it's going to serve other people in any way. And I'm getting better at just kind of letting it dissipate and going, okay, I can't do anything with this, so it's not valuable. Because I think anger can be valuable.
It is.
It's
an incredible learning, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's like any other emotion. I mean, it's got its uses. It's tricky to figure that out. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be irresponsible for me to start trying to tell people how I think they should start using their anger.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like anything else. It's like love or sadness. You know, the deep sadness has a place in you because it is directly tied to your joy. I mean, it's two sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you have that profound sadness, it's because you allow yourself to feel deeply.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you leave yourself that open, you're going to feel some profound joy as well.
Absolutely.
But you have to kind of be open to everything. It's just a tricky space to be in. At least I think so.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I know that I've hurt people with my anger in the past.
Yeah.
You know, and I know I have. You know, and that's all I can do right now is just say this stops now.
Yeah.
Whatever has happened to me, I'm not moving that forward. It's done. It stops right here. I'll take it. I will transform it. I'll process it. And I will not pass it on through the world.
Yeah.
You know, to somebody else. That's all I got.
Yeah.
That's all I got. You know, because I can't punish other people for what I've been through.
Yeah. But that had to be a tough lesson for you to come by as well. I mean,
just realizing that you even have that choice is like,
yeah,
that's where I think transformation happens, you know, where it's like realizing that I don't have to carry this.
Yeah.
Cool. That's like awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I can forgive and be grateful for everything that my parents have been through because, you know, they're like I am right now with my son, where they're just completely overwhelmed and don't know what the hell to do,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, how to handle being a parent. They just, you know.
Well, and being this centered and this grounded with your child this young is actually going to be pretty helpful because there are some infuriating days a-coming.
Oh, God.
Let's say challenging. There's some very challenging days coming.
I'm sure. I don't even know.
Yeah. But you know, it's all beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. It's all beautiful. You know, I've talked about this before. I used to do a bit about it when I was doing stand up back in the day, but there was a Christmas morning when my kids were about 5 and 3. The 5-year-old gets an action figure. And the 3-year-old got this Fisher-Price nightlight lantern thing. And the 3-year-old saw the action figure and wanted it. And he toddles over to his brother, and his brother just lightly pushed him over without even looking at him. And then the little one starts to make the face like he's going to start crying. you know, with the lip quivering and everything. But instead, picks up his lantern and looks at it, looks back at his brother, and I'm like, he's not gonna. And before I can even finish the thought, he walks over to his brother, clocks him in the head, and takes the toy out of his hands while he's screaming on the floor. And I had no idea what to do in that moment. Because none of it made sense. None of it was good. I mean, the only thing I could do was just scream, "Hey!" You know,
you're like, did that just happen?
Yeah, it's like, what do you do with that? Kids are nuts. You know, they'll break your heart, and they'll fill you up, and they'll challenge you in ways that you weren't prepared for, and you know, they temper you, and they make you a better version of yourself. Because you have to think a little bit about what version of yourself you're going to be in front of them and what you're going to leave behind. And, you know, I've said it on this show about 1,000 times. It's not if you're going to fuck up your kids. It's how you're going to fuck up your kids. But with everything that you've got going on, as far as the journey that you've made to become this incredibly wise, thoughtful person, who's really given thought to what kind of a human being you are as far as an experience for other people. Because you do think about that. What kind of a human, like what sort of tree am I in this field of trees? I feel like you got a leg up. You're probably doing okay.
Yeah, it's just basics right now.
Yeah, you know, of course. I mean, they're small, so it's...
Building stuff and trying to make a couple bucks. That's it. That's kind of, you know, even now it's like my wife just changed jobs and my kid doesn't... We don't even have health care at the moment, and that's a whole other...
Yeah,
that's a whole other conversation terrifying. For, you know, another time. But still, like, now I'm trying to figure out, you know, can I afford...
Yeah.
You know, healthcare and, you know, how's that going to work? And it's just another part of the journey of just figuring out how do we take care of the basics and then,
yeah.
And then hopefully we can take care of ourselves in the process.
You know, there's that hopeful optimism again. That's one of the things, about you that, I was aware of from the very first time I met you, and it's one of the things that I think makes you an incredible joy to talk to.
Oh, I appreciate that.
And I thank you for talking to me today.
Oh, thank you so much.
And there you have it, everybody. Another one in the books. Kind of a strange one, like I told you, but you know what? A beautiful one. And I could not be more excited that you got to hear that and that I get to listen to it again and figure out if there's anything I can pull out of that to incorporate into my daily life. If you want to get some more Abe in your life, check out Alexander and the Big Sleep. You may remember them from a couple episodes back when Alexander himself played acoustic. As for me, I got some big stuff coming in the works. If you want to get some Seattle in your heart, Denver, you can come see me playing drums with the band Decatur, opening for Candlebox at the Summit Music Hall in July. But until then, there's always something to be grateful for. Don't kill yourselves out there.